As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Stick around to the end of today's episode to hear the trailer of Between the Lines, The Athletic's newest narrative podcast documenting the intersection of race and football. Coming to the Athletic Football Show feed on February 14th.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee. At Starbucks with a double latte, skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long and all spring training along. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic, and I am joined once again by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. So, Doug, how about this? It's our last show before spring training.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm wondering if you're like me. The first thing I think of when Super Bowl week arrives is, what else? Pitchers and catchers.
Yeah.
What's wrong with me?
No, that's right. That's correct.
That's the right answer, right?
That is the right answer. Yes. Very well done.
Okay. So it's true, though. Once that confetti falls to earth and showers the Super Bowl winners, my first thought is, how many days till pitchers and catchers? And this year, that answer is like two.
Yeah,
so get ready, because here it comes. So this show is going to be epic, because in a few minutes, we will be talking to a man who just arrived in spring training before pitchers and catchers. That is Adam Wainwright of the Cardinals, who will join us to talk about that, about Team USA, and about the number one topic on both of our minds, by which I can only mean, how many at-bats can he convince Ollie Marmol to give him this year? But first, Doug, can we talk about the new schedule in our sport?
Yeah.
For the first time in baseball history this season, every team is going to play every other team. Mm. So I just wrote a piece about this in The Athletic the other day. And the last time I looked, it had over 600 reader comments. 600. I'm going to make a confession. I did not read all 600 of them. But Doug, you'll be shocked to hear that they are mostly divided into two camps. In fact, the usual two camps. One camp is the people who say, this is great. I can't wait to see Ohtani come to Milwaukee, or Julio Rodriguez come to Pittsburgh, or whatever they think. Or they'll say, I was so sick of playing the fill in the team, the Yankees, the Royals, whoever, 19 freaking times a year, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one of the camps.
Yeah.
But then the other camp is not quite as upbeat, because that camp basically says to just about everything, the schedule wasn't broken, so of course baseball decided to fix it. Or, I always thought rivalries are the best thing in sports, so of course baseball decided to try to destroy all of them. Or they say, I hate interleague play, so of course baseball is going to give me twice as much of it, etc., etc., etc. Okay, so I have two things to say. The first is, you know, I didn't make the schedule. I just tried to explain it. Leave me alone. The second is, Doug, I always count on you to be the voice of reason around here. So you tell me, is this a good idea or a dumb idea? Every team playing every other team.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I'm going to ask you a question first. The spirit of why we had to create this balanced schedule was what? To be comparing apples to apples going to postseason? What was the
We'll get into some of the specifics. But first off, because we now have the universal DH, it did create an opportunity that was always a little precarious before, because you couldn't have 46 interleague games when half of them would involve a team playing by different rules. That just was wrong. Okay, so that opened some doors. But I think the other thing is just modernizing the schedule. You know, like the NBA for a long time, every team has played every other team, and they've leaned into the schedule as a way to promote matchups, stars, personalities. And baseball decided the best way to promote somebody like Ohtani is he's coming to your town at least once every 2 years, no matter where your town is. I mean, all right, not if you live in Des Moines. But if you live in a major league town, every team will visit every other team at least once every 2 years. Plus, it's definitely more fair when it comes to deciding wild card races, and there's now three wild cards. So we can run through some of that stuff later, but I'd like you to react to like those two camps that I referred to earlier of baseball's great, we should never change anything, or it's about time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm going to start with the like just playing and interleague starting up in 97?
97.
Yeah, and so I remember how important the rivalry was. I was with the Cubs, so it was Cubs-White Sox. And I like the idea of, you know, being in the East Coast. First of all, just the travel standpoint, it was nice. I took the train to Baltimore or whatever. You know, so there's a geographic sense about the fans in your market can just easily drive because you're playing in the Northeast and there's rivalries every year. And I get that. And I think as a player, it was fun. It was certainly fun to be part of it. Now, the other side of the coin from playing standpoint is, you know, I did enjoy seeing cities that I never saw before. You know, when it was so dichotomous, I was like, okay, it's great. I took a lot of pride in representing the National League and trying to beat up on the American League as a National League fan growing up. But it was great to go all these places and just, you know, see how it would go. And the fact that you have Ohtani's of the world, Aaron Judge's and so on, you want baseball to celebrate that and see it. And you want all the teams and all the markets to get a chance to witness these players. I think the big deal is like, when do they get a day off? Good question, right? Especially if Ohtani's like pitching. But so I do understand from a balanced schedule standpoint of the travel will be interesting. I'm sure they'll figure it out, but it's a lot of different cities. But at the same time, you know, I understand that you're creating some sort of balance and say, you know, equality of schedule. Like, okay, there's all these wild cards. The more you expand into wild cards, and where you're supposed to compare teams with like experiences, the more it pushes you to feel like you have to play the same kind of schedule. And that does make sense. And I think it's a function of playoff baseball expanding. And so I definitely get that. But yeah, old school in me, rivalries, yeah. But, you know, once again, interleague wasn't there before 97. So it's like, how far back do you go to establish the precedent you want to hold on to? Is a tough one, but I definitely love Cubs White Sox, or, you know, being in these kind of rivalries. But
it's not going away.
No, it's not going away. Right. It's just it's not going away.
Instead of Yankees, Red often? Sox or Dodgers, Giants 19 times a year, it's 13 times a year.
Right. You've reduced it. which is 13 is plenty. And yes, do you get, I guess, tired? I don't know. I as a hitter, I always wanted to see someone a lot because I always felt like I could get an advantage. So seeing Greg Maddux like 8 times, although it's a lot of outs, it also allowed me to figure out like how to hit his cutter, you know? So I don't know. I mean, so it's good. I get both camps. I get it. I think it's still going to be fun. Like, I'm curious to see how it plays out, but if I'm a fan, I'd love to see Ohtani wherever he is. And I think that's cool.
Yeah. Well, all right, you mentioned fairness of the schedule. So I actually did, with the help of my friends from Stats, compute strength of schedule. And some interesting things came out of it. Look, if you were a good team that played in a bad division, you cleaned up, okay? And if that was the case before, under this schedule, it's going to get harder. The main example I used was the Guardians. You know how many games the Guardians played all last season against teams with a winning record? How about 46 all season? 46. Meanwhile, the teams in the AL East are playing 79, 80. The Red Sox played 93. And I want you to think about how it skews the wild card races if those teams are involved. Mm-hmm. So this year, the Guardians still have one of the easiest schedules relatively, but they go from 46 games against teams that had a winning record last year to 60. So how important is that change, just in the interest of fairness?
It's important. You know, and as we were talking, like the apples to apples, it's not going to ever be perfect. You're in a division. But if you, at least if you're talking about wild card, and I think that's the key thing we're underscoring, then you need to, especially as you're expanding it, you need to gain more common ground around like who you're playing. I think that just makes sense. Now, I'm curious, I guess the flip side of that is the division, right? Because now you're playing less in your division. So I guess, what does that do? Like, okay, you're the Royals and you're playing in the AL Central. Versus the Yankees. The Yankees don't have to deal with the Red Sox, Rays, and all these tough teams as often, right? So what does that do for your – what does that do for your
subtract
division? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a – you know, teams were playing almost half their games in their division. 76 of the 162 used to be against their division. That now dips all the way to 52. Mm-hmm. And so the upshot is – teams in the division race are playing slightly more games against common opponents because the interleague schedules and the outer division schedules are the same now except for one game. And the big difference is those wild card races, where now teams battling for a wild card will have played more than three quarters of their games against common opponents, which is a big change from what we had.
Right. And I think, look, it's not that, you know, I think I'm thinking this through as I'm talking about it, but it's like you have to always ask the question of the priority, right? Like when you're trying to figure out who wins the division, we all kind of agree that, you know, you win a division over 162 games, you know, or you come out on top, that's saying something. And the question becomes, how much should you beat up on the people in your division to establish that crown? You know, and when you get to three quarters outside, you start to go, well, you won by beating up all these teams outside of your division. Right? And maybe that's fine. Like in terms of caliber of schedule, then it may be the same anyway. But there is something, whether it's rivalry wise to say, yeah, I'm the Yankees, I beat the Red Sox to get in, and I had to beat them a lot. I always like that body of work in terms of what I'm calling games, to know that head to head and how they fared against each other. When it goes from, you know, 9 and 10 to, you know, 7 and 6, it's a little different. I don't know. You know, so to me, that's the fine line. I'm not saying this is going to hurt that, but it raises that question as you put more emphasis on what happens outside your division.
Right. Okay. But I'll give you the converse. I was talking to a guy from one team. They're a contender. And I'm just pointing out, you know, the Guardians stat that I mentioned to you earlier. And like, he was basically saying, that's just wrong. If the Blue Jays win 90 games and the Guardians win 90 games, that should mean the same thing. If you're going to have a wild card race, the win totals have to be more comparable. Mm. So that's really the idea here, and I think that works. Let me ask you about something else, because I did something I've never done in my life except when calculating my frequent flyer reservoir. I actually analyzed air miles. So yeah,
I was just going to ask you that too.
Yeah, the Mariners are going to fly 10,000 more miles this season than the Astros. The Cardinals, because they're going to London, they're going to fly 10,000 more miles than the Brewers. And there's some other disparities that aren't quite that dramatic. But when I looked into this, I was told, well, actually, air miles are overrated. Because once you get on the plane, does it really matter if a flight is 2 hours or 2 hours and 45 minutes? And Doug, you've flown on those planes. What do you think?
I mean, I'm sure it matters. I mean, I don't know. They have load management teams now, so I think they're now the best to answer these questions. I certainly rather fly 2 hours than five. I mean, I remember when Montreal was in Puerto Rico and stuff. I mean, it's exhausting. It is exhausting at a certain point. So, but yeah, is it quantifiably different to fly 9,000 more miles? You know, I don't know. I mean, the Mariners, look, they haven't won a World Series, and they're the ones who travel seemingly the most every year. I don't know if there's something to be said about that, but that's tough. It is tough. And when I played in Texas, every road trip, because it was so hot in the summer, we couldn't play day games. So we played night games, and then we'd have to leave to go to the Seattle right after a night game. We'd leave at 1 o'clock midnight and get to Seattle at like 4 or 5 in the morning. It was horrible. And can you suck it up and all these other things, but I don't know, over time that's not easy. But I was curious about the geography of it, because you know, if we're trying to accomplish that, all teams are having the same experience, like you said, like, all right, the 90 win the Guardians versus the 90 win Brewers versus the 90 win Yankees, and trying to create some sort of equality. But the advantage of the divisions theoretically was this geography. You're located in the same area, and it facilitates travel. It helps the fans be able to see their teams if they want to get in a train or a car. I think that was part of it. I can understand choosing to de-emphasize that, but that doesn't mean that doesn't take away from the fact that that does matter. You know, there is some element of that is cool, that has a geography. But yes, do I want to go to spring training every year and just be the victim of, well, you just happen to be in a tough division? But that tough division, as we know, changes depending on who's putting the money in. The Mets now, you know, what are they paying, like $2.5 billion right now? I mean, you know, you have teams like that. That could turn a whole division upside down in one offseason. So I think we're always going to be chasing that to a certain degree.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you one final thing. Do you realize this means we'll never again have a World Series in which the two teams playing had never played each other all season?
Yeah.
Personally, I think that used to really matter in like 1957. I don't think it matters much at all in 2023, but you played baseball, you're a huge fan of baseball long before interleague play. So I'd love to get your take. Does that matter or not?
Well, look, the fandom childhood side of me does not like that at all. It doesn't. I mean, I love the surprise, you know, the element of surprise of like the two mysteries of the two leagues. I mean, I also love spring training because it's like, oh, wow, the Twins played the Phillies. That was like unheard of. I thought that was just cool. When you associate teams with a uniform and a set of colors and a league, I think, you know, you're indoctrinated in that. It's just, to me, I thought the surprise is really cool because it's just something you'd never see. Oh, the A's are playing the Mets in the World Series or whatever. So I think I'm sure this generation doesn't care about that as much, you know. You know, the mystery, and I don't think that's there. But that's what I tap, and knowing that they hadn't played each other, it's just a mystery. Sure, there's data now and all that. I accept that. But that's what it meant to me back in the day, to see teams that never saw each other, Phillies, Royals, 80 World Series, to play.
But isn't that day long gone? Because of interleague play?
It's already gone. Yeah, it's long gone. But I'm just pointing out that that's the first thing that I tap. I'm not saying that's a reason to change it. But, you know, would I love to see a season just thrown in there once in a blue moon, that you have two divisions, the winners of each division play each other, and then the winners play the World Series? I think that would be pretty interesting. Just to do it as like a throwback season, like the year 2040 or something. But, you know.
And how much TV money are they going to give back? Probably not going to happen.
That's not happening. Yeah, not
happening. All right. One thing you should know is I learned this while working on this story, too. Baseball actually asked every team for travel requests, and then it did its best to honor them. And I feel like that's a lot better than some of the brutal schedules that you had to deal with back when you played. So later in the show, when we get to the dugout segment, we're going to have you tell us about some long, memorable, crazy trip that you went on. And I know that will be awesome.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We are so stoked to welcome in this week's special guest because this one's been a long time coming. But now, finally, he's here. One of our very favorite people in baseball. It is Adam Wainwright, Cardinals legend. Adam, thanks for visiting us in Starkville, man. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. And yeah, I've been waiting forever to do this, and you just never could fit me in.
Yeah, that's not quite how it worked.
Well, we're waiting for you to get your passport. You need a passport to be in Starkville, so we were waiting for your passport to come through.
I understand. Hey, just know that I have my little son here. He's four, or he's about to be four, and he has a tornado, so at any moment he could enter into the equation here.
Oh, it's all good.
We look forward to chatting with him, too.
Absolutely.
All right, so Adam is joining us from beautiful Jupiter, Florida, where today, if I have this right, you began the first day of your last spring training. So I'm just making sure that's right, that you haven't changed your mind about this being your last year. I know you sort of said that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I did, and I'm hoping to get all of that out of the way in spring training because I just don't want to do retirement interviews all season. You know, I want to be great this year. I want to go out and be focused and think about what I'm accomplishing or trying to accomplish in that very moment. But I understand how it works. You know, I've been playing for a long time. It's newsworthy somewhat. So I have entered into Roger Dean Stadium as my last year as an active player. How about that?
Okay. Yeah, so let's get this out of the way. Is it surreal to think this is your final spring training?
Yeah, I mean, my wife reminds me all the time that this is not my final spring training because I will – this is her favorite time of year. And she loves coming to Jupiter. So she's like, no, you and I are still going to go down there and – you can be like a volunteer coach or something. So I'll be in here spring training. But as a player, I know what you're saying. As a player, I don't know. I think I'm just kind of ready for that. You know, I'm ready to finish strong and have a great year and be very focused and go oriented this year. But I'm ready for this to be my last year too. Mm-hmm. It's been a good run, man. I'll turn 42 this year in August, and some of my old teammates told me, you know, play as long as you can because you can never come back once you retire. But, you know, once you hit 42, no one's going, oh, I can't believe you retired that soon. What you still had more, you know, 42 is a – you've done it at 42.
Well, you didn't look like you were done most of last year. But I was thinking, Doug, you didn't even know in your last spring training that it was your last spring training, right? Yankees just released you?
I was released 2005, and I grappled with coming back and Padre minor league deal. So I'm curious, Waino, about were there other moments or any moment before you're like, this might be it? You always think there's like this crystal ball, like where you can see like, okay, when this happens, when I pull my hamstring and it's done, did you have a moment of clarity, or is it kind of, you know, still coming together?
No, I certainly had thoughts of retirement in 2018 when my contract was coming to an expiration and my arm was also expiring. You know, I had just horrible pains in my outside of my arm. And, you know, if you go back and look at that tape of me pitching, trying to get through games in 2000, really the middle of 17 on, and then all the way into 18, that was really, really tough. I thought I was retiring for sure during the middle of that season. Actually, in my mind, I did retire. But my teammate, Dominic Leone, I had stopped throwing. My arm wasn't recovering. Rehab wasn't working. And my teammate, Dominic Leone, he needed a throwing part. And our trainer was not able to, you know, really play catch with him very effectively out to a certain distance. And so I said, hey, what's worse can happen? I hurt my arm. You know, it's already blown out, so it doesn't matter. So I went out there with him, and I tried every single way, underarm and sidearm and whatever, and he got back to a certain distance where I'm like, all right, I got to just throw this like a baseball. And then I just took my arm back just a hair longer in the beginning, and it kind of got my arm past the point of that, like, because when I was pitching before that, every time I threw a pitch, I heard those bones hit in the backside of my arm.
Oh, wow.
Bam, bam, bam. And that developed a real nasty bone bruise in there and a microfracture. And I was pitching with a broken arm. It was really, really tough, man. That's the most pain I've ever had pitching by a lot, not even close. And I've had to, you know, when you pitch as long as I do, you have to pitch through some things. You have to grind through some things. But that was just really, really, really painful. Every throw, I had to pump myself up for it. And I was getting a stomach ache on every throw. It was hurting so bad. And then for whatever reason, when I extended my arm just a hair longer in the back, it got me past whatever point of that was where I was bumping bones. And I was able to start throwing it back to him. And I started, well, golly, this doesn't, you know, this is okay. I can make that work. And as he got back farther, I got back farther with him and started throwing the ball with him. And I always tell him he got me back, because I came back at the end of that year and pitched. And I know that I would have never done that if it wasn't for his need for a throwing partner. So he always tells me I got him back and he got me back. It was like a good partnership. But I'm always going to be thankful for that, you know, because in my mind I was done.
Wow, that's an amazing story. Yeah. I'd never heard you tell that one before. Here's a question. Last year you got to watch Albert and Yadi go through their last season. And I'm curious, what did you learn from watching them experience what they got to experience? I mean, Albert celebrated by spending a couple of months as the best hitter in baseball, so that might be a plan.
Yeah, right. I would love to celebrate this year as being one of the best hitters in baseball. That'd be great. I would love that. They took that opportunity from me, though, Dougie. You know what, though? I thought it was really fun watching Albert go through that, especially, you know, Yadi's career speaks for itself, too. But watching Albert his final year, what sticks out the most was the joy that he was playing with. He was having so much fun playing the game of baseball, the game that he loved and has always played. And he's an older fellow. I mean, he was having to do things a little differently than when he did at a younger age, and making fun of that, you know, having fun with figuring out new ways to do things and coming up with different leg kicks, or, you know, and then about midway through the year, he really figured out where his body needed to be in space to make a good swing through the zone. And after that, it was just all she wrote, like he used to do. But what really sticks out to me is the joy that he played with. And I really think that's something I'm going to try to do this year. And I've been trying to do this the last couple of years, enjoying like all the different cities at a different level and eating all the best restaurants that I love going to, and making sure I go to the golf courses that I really love playing, and and trying new things that I never did on the road, going out and seeing the cities. You know, there's so many times we as baseball players get stuck in the mode of, I go to the hotel, I go to the field, I come back to the hotel, I go to sleep, I wake up, I go work out, I go to the field. And you don't get really this, not, if you don't allow it, there's no time to really enjoy the game of baseball and those great parks. And so I started going on these old man walks and really seeing the stadiums behind the scenes kind of thing. But I really think this year, what I really want to accomplish is, as I'm performing out on the field, just remember how fun that is. You know, I think I would regret it if I didn't do that.
Doug, you have any suggestions for what Adam Wainwright could do to even top the old man walks as he commemorates every stop this year?
Well, I mean, you could do spacewalks, you know, just get up on in Mars out there. My retirement kind of snuck up on me a little bit. So, but I did know I was getting older. So I started getting autographed bats and balls and collected a lot more in the last year. But I also remember Mariano Rivera when he walked away. He took the time and sort of talked to all the workers that really made the game go, you know, the concessions. And I thought that was really powerful. Anything you've thought about in that vein about, all right, you have your man walks, but just from a baseball stand, smelling the roses, whether it's autographs or just the staff, you know, changing that dynamic.
Yeah. On those walks, I've spent time with people the last year or two, getting to know what they do, you know, getting our concession area and seeing how many, really at Busch Stadium especially, but at Busch Stadium, getting back behind the scenes and, all right, how many hot dogs do we do a game, you know, and talking with all the vendors and, all right, now what's your job here and what's your name, and taking pictures with them and meet them and posting. I post some of that stuff on Twitter too, and I get to meet them. I post some of that stuff on Twitter and the grounds crews. I really spend time with the grounds crews and letting them know how appreciative we are as players that we get to play on these unbelievable fields, because those, they're like perfect. The blade of grass is like down to the blade of grass on these fields. It's just perfect. And the mounds are just perfect. And it's just remarkable. The job and the hours that they put in to make it great is really special too. So, you know, when we get to the field at, at, you know, 2 o'clock or so, 1:30, 2 o'clock for a game at 7, the vendors have already been there preparing, you know, for a couple of hours already. The grounds crew's already been there since the early morning preparing. So a lot of people put in the time and effort to make our craft, be a spectacle that people want to go watch.
You know, one thing that Albert and Yachty both did last year was pitch. So I think we both know what that means that the Cardinals need to do for you this year. One thing that I promised you before we invited you on this show was that this would be the kickoff campaign to make sure the Cardinals get you, Adam Wainwright, to the plate with a bat as many times as possible this year. So we will do our part. Has that work begun on your end?
Oh, yeah. So I played a little concert this offseason up in Springfield, Illinois, and there's about 600 Cardinals fans up in there, and Ollie Marmol was there with me, and he was enjoying the show, and I put him on the spot in front of everybody, and I said the exact same thing. Hey, in their final year, Yachty got the pitch, Albert got the pitch twice, by the way. Yep. And I think Yachty actually gets pitched. Maybe he was the one that pitched twice. Yachty one of them pitched twice. Yeah. I said, don't y'all think that I should get in at bat in the final season? And they all just, you know, yeah, went crazy. And so I said, Holly, come on up here. Come to the stage. Let's talk about it. So I caught him up on the stage, and I said, will you commit to me in front of everybody here that you will give me an at bat? And he felt the pressure, and he said, I will commit to that. So after the show, he goes, but I never said in the regular season, I was like, nope, 600 people are expecting this thing to go down in the regular season. Don't let them down.
Hey, wait a second now. With Albert gone, that seems to leave a lot of DH at bats.
Oh, yeah.
Just waiting there to be taken. Like, what would be a reasonable number of at-bats for you to take? 100? 200? Well, I mean, how Ohtani-like could you possibly be?
If I'm not mistaken, Ollie Marmol
just sees the light.
If I'm not mistaken, I'm like right around 300 as a pinch hitter.
Nice.
So I always go to the bench coach, and I'll do that this year, and I'll go to the manager and remind him. I'll say, "All right, who do you got on the bench?" And they'll say, "You know, we got Brandon Donovan or whoever it is." And I'll say, "Oh, yeah, he's a pretty good player. How many home runs does he have in the big leagues?" And they're like, "Well, he's got 4 home runs." Cool. All right. Well, I've got double that, more than double that. I got 10 home runs in the big league. And I'll be like, I wonder what his career batting average is or slash hitting it. Like, I'll have all the numbers. And I'll go to him and I'll remind him that I'm the best option. It hasn't worked. The only manager, Matheny a little bit, but the only manager that really believed in me to put me in those tough situations was La Russa. He pinch hit me a few times, like quite a few times, actually. I think I had 6 at bats 1 year pinch hitting season. I went 3 for 6 that year. Oh, I'm just saying.
That's yeah. it. That's the evidence.
Don't these guys check the stats? I mean, maybe my favorite thing you ever did was the year that I know you slugged over 450, but you had 10 extra base hits and only 3 singles. So take that, Ohtani.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple of those years, I really spent a lot of time working on my hitting because I knew my arm was not in great shape, and I knew I was going to give up some runs, so I knew I had to drive a few in. And 1 year, I think the year that you're talking about, I think I had my first 9 hits were extra base hits.
That's right.
And I think it set an MLB all-time record on that. And I mean, you know, a couple times I'd be down 3-0. Like I was down 3-0 to the Phillies one time, and I hit a 3-run bomb to tie it. We ended up winning 4-3, and I got the win. I mean, you know, it was out of necessity though. I was like, all right, I'm going to go out and pitch. What do I bring to the table? Right now, I'm not bringing a whole lot with my arm. I gotta be that next guy in the order that can do something for some damage to win these games because I'm, you know, I really think that might have been the only reason they let me pitch anymore was because I was sitting.
Doug, did you ever get 9 extra base hits in a row?
Oh no, 9 singles possibly over probably 3 years. I mean, if I count that. So that is impressive. 9 extra base hits in a row. That's no, I've definitely not done that. but wait, I was curious. You mentioned La Russa, Marmol. You know, what have you seen? You know, you have so much of a landscape of view of this game over decades. But what have you seen the evolution of leadership? Like you've been under La Russa and then Marmol, just different styles, but generally just what you've seen and just the shift in managerial strategy and how you actually embrace it.
Yeah, well, I think strategies have changed a little bit and evolved as the game has because we've had to, and this year we'll have to do it again with the shift rules and the pitch clock rules changing and understanding your rosters. But I also think that communicating with players is evolved. I think it's you're dealing with a different kind of players now, different you know, agents involved, and feelings get hurt a lot easier now than they used to. You know, you used to have a real tough, thick skin around the managers, especially Tony. Tony could be tough, man. Tony would let you know if you weren't acting right, and he did some things hilarious. Maybe I'll put in a book one day. But Tony was a beauty, man. And but it's always the smartest guy out there, ultra prepared. You know, Matheny stepped up, did a great job for a number of years, had a great career record as the Cardinals skipper. Great leader of men, great guy you wanted to believe in. And Schulte took over. Mike Schilt did a great job with preparation. And he's probably, as far as smarts go, man, he was right there with Tony as far as how to manage a game and the understanding. I just think we've had – And Ollie and Schulte are the same kind of cloth because Ollie learned from Schulte and learned from Mark DeJean. And Mark DeJean taught Schulte, taught Ollie, but they all learned from George Kissel, who was a legendary coach and teacher of the game in our organization. And George Kissel just poured into these guys. And they're all kind of disciples of George. And of DJ and of Tony, And so the how to run the game, how to manage a game, the know-how of managing a game has all sort of evolved the same way with those guys. But I would say our manager now, Ollie Marmol, I think he does as good a job or better than anyone I've ever seen of relating to players and incorporating the game of baseball with all the real life. And he's had every role out there. You know, he's a young guy. I can't believe he's 35 years old. And he was a first base coach. He's done some third base coach. He was a manager in the minor leagues. He's a bench coach in the big leagues. Manager now, he's been prepared. You know, he's been groomed for this position. So he's going to do a great job. He did a great job last year. He's going to keep doing a great job this year.
All right, it's time for that question you're going to be asked about a billion times this year. Life without Yadi, 328 starts pitching to that guy. How's your job going to change in a year when you're going to make zero starts pitching to Yadier Molina?
Yeah, I always tell people I never believe he's retired until I see him put his paperwork in and he's already in the Hall of Fame, because I just think he's such a talent and he loves to play the game so much. It would never surprise me to see him come back and play again, but he's saying he's not. Therefore, I will say I have over the years pitched without Yadi before. Last year, I pitched a couple of months without Yadi around. I can do it. I just preferred not to all the years, because why would you? Why would you not want to pitch to the greatest catcher of all time defensively in my mind? So I don't know how it'll be without having him in the clubhouse, you know, having him on the bus rides. He's just always, you know, he and I have always just been together. So those are the things that are going to stick out to me, is just not having him, you know, not having my buddy already, you know, more even than catching. But I love going over game plan situations with him. I love sitting on the bench next to him, you know, not next to him, but he'll come over and we'll say something really quick during the game or go over how we're going to face hitters. And he and I think a lot alike, you know, we've probably, because we've been thinking together for so long. So I'll miss him. He's a great friend and a great teammate. Yeah. I'll help you with a different show, Mr. America.
Well, right now, because
look, I'm talking to Mr. Jason and Mr. Doug and we're having a great conversation. You know what we're talking about? Baseball.
Do you want to run over there and do it and come back?
It's all good.
Here, I'll take you with me.
Come on, let's go. Yeah, let's go change the channel. We've never done this, Doug.
This is good TV right here.
Yeah,
this
it is.
Starkville right. First here.
I think this is right up there with Drew Carey's dogs barking.
Oh, yeah.
This is awesome.
Hey, buddy, Paw Patrol.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can relate
all
to
right,
that.
We're back.
We have a whole collection.
Okay. Well, while you're strolling back to your office there, another cool thing you're going to do this year is you're going to pitch for Team USA. I'm going to say you definitely had the most awesome announcement, "I'm playing for Team USA" tweet in history. You painted the red, white, and blue stripes on your face. I just hope you didn't use the kind of paint that doesn't wash off or anything. Did you pick the paint, and did you paint your own face?
Well, let me tell you how patriotic I am. That paint goes back to World Cup 2014. I was watching the World Cup, and my girls and I, we love the World Cup, and I said, Jenny, you gotta paint my face. I need to go into the stadium. So she painted my face red, white, and blue. I kept it on all day during batting practice and everything. And I went out for the national anthem with red, white, and blue on my face. And that was a picture I took right before I went to the field for the World Cup that day. But man, I couldn't be more proud to play for our country. Hopefully, I can perform as well as we need me to, and we can bring a gold medal home. We have a stacked team. Man, we have a really, really talented team. So just got to go out there and perform.
What excites you about the WBC? You've never done it, right?
Well, I've never done it. A couple things excite me about this. So in 2004, I was on the pre-qualifier Olympic team. We were going to go to Panama and try to qualify for the Olympics. And I pitched terrible in the pre, you know, get ready for it on the fall, Arizona Fall League. I pitched terrible, and I was the only one sent home and not allowed to go perform. And the manager was Frank Robinson. The pitching coach was Dave Stewart. And I got sent home, and I was not able to compete with that team. And they ended up not qualifying for the Olympics. But I've so much God just ticked me off not being there, you know, and not being good enough to be there. And it was more mental than it was physical. And now I've reached a different point in my career now where I want to make up for that. You know, that's one thing that excites me. Two, I've watched several WBCs now and watched my teammate Yadier Molina get one of the biggest hits of the whole tournament in the semifinal game. He got the game-winning hit, and his team went on to the finals a couple years ago when it was – they had a great bunch of position players, but they really only had a couple of minor league pitchers only out there on the Puerto Rican team, and he took that team all the way to the finals on his back. It was great. And I remember him saying that the most important hit of his Major League Baseball career was that one. More than the home run in Game 7 against the Mets that sent us to the World Series, more than all the wonderful things he's done in his Big League career, that was his most favorite hit he ever had in his career. And then watching just how fired up the team was this last time when we won a gold medal, Nolan and Goldie and all those guys and the intensity that they were playing with, that's what I'm excited about, because I want to get off to a great start this year. And I think that intensity that I'll be playing with in spring training will put me off to the start mentally that I need, because we'll be playing meaningful games right away. And I look forward to that.
So when I would, you know, once you accomplish this, you get into the WBC, is there anything on your bucket list that you're like, gosh, I wish I could do that. That, you know, what's left, I guess you would say, at this point.
Man, I mean, the gold medal is it. Bringing a gold medal home and taking a picture with the American flag draped over my shoulders and a gold medal around my neck would be just about all I could really ever ask for to put up the end of my career. I mean, I want to win a World Series this year. I want to have a great season personally. But if I could add a gold medal to it, I mean, a couple years ago when I wasn't sure I was going to play, the Tokyo Olympics were coming up. Baseball was back. If I wasn't going to play again in 21, I was going to write as many letters as I could, put it on social media every day that I wanted to be on that Tokyo baseball team, that Olympic baseball team. And so I don't know. I've always wanted to be a part of that, playing for the country. So.
Well, I got chills just thinking about that picture of you with that flag. That's really cool.
Me too, buddy.
hey, we can't let you leave without asking you about your singing. In fact, the last time I asked you if you could come on, you sent me a photo of yourself in the studio recording an album. So I was watching the Grammys Sunday night, looking for you in the front row next to Adele. No sign of you there, but I know you did record an album. Why don't you tell us about it?
I did. It's not come out yet. They're finishing the final mix of it right now. The sound mixers are putting everything together. It's all in the final production phases right now. I've already cut all the vocals and the music is made. It's unbelievable, man. The musicians I worked with, you can't even believe it. You know, the fiddle and mandolin player from the Steel Drivers was with me. Garth Brooks's piano player, the lead guitarist from Brooks and Dunn and Reba McEntire, and the bass player from Brooks and Dunn and Reba, and a guy named Greg Morrow was on drums, who's been on just about every album cut in Nashville, and working with a guy named Gary Baker in production and helping me write songs. That wrote that song I Swear. He wrote I'm Already There. He wrote 8 number one country music hits. He's in the Hall of Fame. The people I've worked with are just really, really talented, and they're telling me I always said, hey, be very, very honest, because the last thing I want to do is embarrass myself thinking like we're doing something great there. And they're all telling me that our project is special. So I can't wait for it to be released. It's going to be released mid-season this year. Wow. So
can you go on tour during the season? You going to like start a tour while you're in between starts or something?
No, but I have thought about playing a couple of shows at road venues, you know. After music is released, we'll see what happens. I don't want to put the cart before the horse, because I know it's there's so many artists out there that are so much more talented than I am, and have been grinding at it for so much longer than I have. I just know this: I'm having fun with it. I'm having a blast writing songs. Can you hear my son in there? I'm having a blast writing songs. I'm having a blast singing and playing. I love playing guitar and singing. And as long as it stays fun, I'm going to keep doing it.
Do you play your songs around the house? Like, does the Wainwright family sit around singing Adam Wainwright tunes?
Oh yeah, yeah. My girls know all the words. It's actually a good feeling. And I can tell you this: if it wasn't good, my daughters would let me know. Because my daughter, my oldest daughter, Bailey, is in the choir, is a very, very accomplished singer herself, young singer, 16 years old, but she can really go, man. She's got a great voice and great range. And she tells me if I'm off key or if I miss a note or something, she's like, Dad, are you serious? So they will let me know. So they've told me it's pretty good, too. And they know the words. When your daughter's singing your own songs, that's a pretty good feeling.
That is awesome. Well, if you think of a song like,
wait for this thing.
Well, Fogerty with Center Field, you know, that was like an iconic. That is an iconic baseball song. We need like a pitcher song, so you maybe even got to write it like a pitcher song. You know,
no, but here's the thing: I don't want to be a gimmick,
right?
You know, so all my songs are about my real, like my life and things have gone on, my family and my upbringing and stuff like that. But I don't want to just sing baseball songs, because everybody's like, "Oh, you're a baseball player, sing a baseball song."
Well, Ollie would mention that you would kind of test him, you know, test it out on him, like you're testing your songs. Any other teammates get wind of like while you're writing songs, like, hey, what do you think? Did you test it on your teammates?
Oh yeah, all of them. Yeah, I would say, hey y'all, check this out, and actually, hey y'all is one of the name of my songs. I would come into the training room if there was only a couple guys in there, and you know, you don't want to just barge in and say, hey, listen to my song, everybody. But if they're willing, or if sometimes they would say, hey, go grab your guitar, you know, in the video room. Or I like to go back into the storage room and play, and somebody walks by and is like, all right, let me hear one. I'll play one for them. I love that stuff, man. I have fun with it. Hotel rooms especially. Sorry for my neighbors, but I will get it out every now and then. I'll have some guys over and let them, you know, request songs and play and sing. And I love to do that, man. I love to do that. And the guys have been real supportive of me. Skip Schumacher and I, you know, we sort of came up in the game together. And Skip, and so I was playing some back when we were teammates. We were teammates until 2011, but I wasn't playing a lot, especially, you know, once the season started, I kind of stopped playing. It wasn't really till 2015 where I picked it up and I really started playing a lot of music. But he hadn't seen me in a few years on a daily basis. This last year we were in Miami, and he comes over to the hotel room, and I said, hey, I've been writing some songs. Do you mind if I play one for you? And he was like, yeah, whatever. Okay. What kind of song is it? Whatever. And I remember, I'll never forget his reaction, because I played it. And about midway, he was like, he gets his phone out and he starts recording me. And I get done and I'm like, all right, so are you recording me to make fun of me later, or are you recording that in a different way? He's like, dude, that was unbelievable. Like, what just happened? Like, when did you start doing that? Like, it was a great feeling for me, you know, that was a feeling that he had that was natural. So, you know, Yachty, we were in San Diego this last year. Yachty calls me across the clubhouse because they have guitars hanging on the wall. He says, hey, come play some songs. So I grabbed one of the guitars off the wall and tuned it up real quick. And he's, I think he's just filming me. And, you know, some guys are around and I'm playing. And then he turns it around, and there's like 40 Puerto Ricans on there on a Zoom call. You know, you can see the calendar view or whatever, and there was just so many, and they were all like, "Hey, way to go!" It was they request things all the time. That's fun.
Wow. Well, a post game Adam Wainwright concert, I would definitely go to that. So let's make that happen. Okay.
Might have to do it.
All right. Well, look, one final thing. Let's leave you with this. I honestly don't know of anyone who's had more fun pitching or playing baseball than you. Can you put into words the fun that you've experienced doing what you've been doing for the last however many years, 20 years?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, since I was 3 years old, every time anybody asked me what I ever wanted to do, I always told them I want to be a professional baseball player. You know, and so that has always been my dream. And I'm very mindful to always remember that when I'm working out or, you know, pitching a 12 o'clock game out of nowhere or, you know, doubleheaders. Or I always remind myself, this is always what I've wanted to do. This is a dream. And so just to enjoy that, you know, just to don't let it become such a job that you lose the joy in it. And like I said earlier, that's going to be my main focus this year is remember to have so much fun while I'm out there. But that goes autographs and spending time with people. And I remember being an autograph seeker as a kid and I went to an Olympic game in 1996 in Atlanta and watched our team play against Cuba. Got Braden Looper's autograph, who ended up being my teammate a little bit a few years later, and some other guys. Got the Matthew LaCroix and some other guys on that team. I got Chris Benson's autograph. But I remember Chris, Braden, you know, calling out, please sign this for me. And I remember, you know, meeting Lonnie Smith when I was 10 years old in the Atlanta Mall. I'll never forget that, how great he was for me, how great he was to me, and spent time to have a conversation with me. And I'll never forget that. And so when I remember those things, it makes me want to get in those situations, and a kid comes over and talks to me to make sure I spend time with them and talking and sign an autograph form so that memory can maybe be special for them too, like it was for me. Baseball is such an amazing sport. It's such an amazing part of my life, and it's been a fun part of my life, and I don't want that to change. And so I just want to always make sure that I enjoy the blessings that have been bestowed on me.
That's great. Adam, this has been such a blast. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you making time for us. Have a fun spring. Have a great WBC. Make sure you get plenty of at-bats. And I look forward to catching up with you soon. Thanks so much, man.
All right. Thank you. Doug, Jesse, good to talk to you, man.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, it's that time again. It is time for listener trivia, our way of involving you, our favorite listeners in this show. You know, Doug, we didn't have time to cram in a trivia question on our last show, so I think that means we haven't gotten a single question wrong in a month. Sounds good when you put it that way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I talk about undefeated streaks. That's right up there with one of the best all time.
Yeah. It's like saying you haven't made an out in 20 years.
I have not. Nobody could get me out in the last 20 years.
We're close anyway. So look, it's Super Bowl week. I know you heard that rumor. In that vein, we asked our loyal listeners if they could come up with some kind of trivia question that involved the World Series and the Super Bowl. And it was amazing. People came up with some great ones. So it was really hard to pick the question of the week. But we picked a great one. And that was the good news. But now here's the bad news. The guy whose question we picked was a fellow named Mike Frentz, and he couldn't join us today because he had to work. And Doug, we admire that, but we totally hate it when that happens. But at least Mike didn't leave his question to be asked by the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster.
Yes.
He leaned into an incredible invention that we sometimes utilize here. It's known as voicemail. Ooh. So via the miracle of voicemail, here is Mike's question.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Mike Frentz of Hayward, California, with your trivia question for the week. It's a simple one. Name the only pair of cities whose sports teams have faced off in a World Series, a Super Bowl, an NBA Finals, and a Stanley Cup Finals. That's it. Good luck.
That's
Go
it.
Giants.
That's it. So all we need, Doug, is a pair of cities that have matched up in the finals of all four major pro sports. That's a fun question. It's also a really hard question. At least it was hard for me since I have zero knowledge of Stanley Cup Finals history. But before we start analyzing this, let's bring the mayor in here. We have a procedural question. Tim, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, so by city, does Mike also mean region? In other words, would the Patriots and Red Sox both be from, quote, Boston, or at least by his definition?
So yes and no. With the Patriots, yes. So Boston as a sports town would include the Patriots in New England. That being said, the Bay Area is not an answer. Like, it has to be
with you.
San Francisco or Oakland, although the Warriors, now this is really getting complex. The Warriors would count for both because they are the Bay Area. But the team, anyway, you know where I'm going with this.
All right, so Doug, I think we have a shot at this. I don't know if we'll actually get it, but all right, let's think it through.
Yeah.
We know there aren't that many cities or regions that have teams in all four sports.
Right.
So that helps. That narrows it down quite a bit.
Yes.
Like Jacksonville's never won the World Series. So they're out. but the other hard part is they have to be in different leagues or conferences in all of those sports where they couldn't meet in the finals. So that kind of narrows the field, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's what kind of tried to trip me up. So I was like, okay, well, you know, and some of these, I mean, I could do geography like East, West, but I don't know the nuance of like, the South versus the, you know, the North. I'm a little bit out, a little rusty on the NHL divisions. So I don't know.
Let me throw share that. Yeah. So when I started thinking about this, just trying to rummage through the possibilities in my head, I just kept coming back to Boston and New England, maybe because they've played in like 20 title games in the 21st century in all these sports, but they just feel like they fit. I just can't decide what the other city is. Like, my first hunch was Boston and L.A. There were a lot of NBA finals between those teams.
Yep.
You know, there was I covered Red Sox-Dodgers World Series a few years back, so I know they played. So I was thinking about that one, but then I had this voice in the back of my head saying, no, it's got to be Boston in St. Louis. I mean, the Patriots did play the St. Louis Rams in a Super Bowl, which would get them in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm thinking that's a good one. I thought about Boston and Chicago, but they're in the same conference in basketball. So that can't be right. I don't know. I just got Boston on the brain. So, Doug, what are you thinking?
Yeah, and where I get tripped up on the like, what was the conferences like in the 60s? You know, I just like,
yeah,
you know, was there an East right. West? That's what threw me off.
Well, there was no. Remember now, the St. Louis Blues were one of the expansion teams, so we don't have to worry about that them. Okay.
Right, the Blues Bruins are saying like that. Or you're crossing
Blues
out.
Blues and Bruins could have played, but not in the 60s.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I think they're in different conferences, aren't they? Pretty sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I know they're different. Because now it's like Pacific and I don't know. Hockey's going to kill
us. Our hockey knowledge is just filling up the airwaves here.
Okay, I like Boston. I did like Boston, LA because, okay, NBA, you know, that's easy. Bruins, Kings, you know, did that happen? Gretzky?
Maybe.
Possibly.
Maybe.
We know the NFL that happened, right? Did it happen? Boston, the Patriots played. Did they play the Rams or the other Rams? LA? Didn't they play the Rams?
I believe the Patriots at one point played the LA Rams, but now I'm not sure about that either. Okay. I didn't cheat. I can't remember every Super Bowl.
Right. It doesn't count as like Oak.
Patriots played in like 100 Super Bowls. Then they must have played everybody at some point.
Right. So we definitely have. All right. We know Boston. We know NBA, MLB is right. You know, we're not sure about the Kings and then maybe Patriots, Rams, but
right.
But they beat St. Louis or did they beat LA? That's annoying. all right. So wait, St. Louis.
Is there any chance it's some city other than Boston though? Like New York always has teams in both conferences, both leagues.
I mean, New York versus LA.
Could do this, but I couldn't.
Yankees.
Nothing seemed to fit for me.
No, I didn't. The Rangers, Yankees. Yankee. Well, then, all right. So let's football. Giants and Jets. The Jets didn't win. The Giants beat who? The Patriots.
Jets won once. But...
Oh, did they win? Oh, yeah. 69, right? They beat the Colts.
Right.
So, is that right? Yeah. That doesn't count. Giants, who do they beat? They beat the Patriots a bunch of times. That probably doesn't work, right? They beat.
It doesn't work. That does not work.
Packers, maybe? Yeah, is that what are the Packers? They don't count. Milwaukee? I don't know.
I decided they wouldn't count. And they don't. Right. They don't have a hockey team anyway.
No, I think I think we're right. I mean, I tried Boston Philly. That doesn't work, right? Does that work? Boston Philly
does not work.
All right. So I think you're right. I think it's somewhere like Patriots Rams or Patriots Patriots LA. Patriots. You said St. Louis, but we're thinking that doesn't work. Does it work?
We know that they've played in the World Series.
Well, basketball,
we
St. Louis. Does
know
that, work?
That they've. We're pretty sure they played in the Super Bowl. They could have played in the NBA Finals at any point going back a million years.
I don't know.
And then hockey, they're in different conferences.
They weren't that good, St. Louis in NBA. Oh, because I remember when they got the expansion rights, right? They were in the ABA or something, and then they came. Is that right?
No. Obviously, there was the legendary St. Louis team in the ABA, but the St. Louis Hawks were in the NBA way before that.
That hurts.
Bob
don't know.
Pettit.
All right.
Okay, so Bob Pettit against Bill Russell, that could have happened, huh?
Oh, my gosh.
I think it's just a reminder, this question is trickier than it looks.
Okay.
I think we should get it. As usual, we probably won't get it. I'm leaning toward Boston, St. Louis, but I'm going to trust your instinct on this. What do you think, man? Boston, St. Louis or Boston, L.A.? Let's try to get this right. Come on.
Okay. All right. Boston, L.A. We have NBA. Easy. Check. We have MLB, right? NFL. Patriots is easy. Rams. Raiders. I don't know. They didn't play the Rams. NHL. I mean, Kings. I know they're in the finals at some point. Kings, who? Bruins.
Wayne Gretzky played for the Kings.
All right. I like that. St. Louis, NBA is real mystery. Blues versus Bruins. I don't like it. Rams, Patriots, and then MLB is Cardinals, Boston. That's good too. I don't know. I'm feeling very LA on this one, but I just.
Okay, we're going to trust you.
I don't know.
All right, let's bring in the mayor. Mayor Tim, I believe Doug Glanville has commanded that we are going to guess Boston and Los Angeles. Ugh. Is there any chance that's right?
No. He talked you out of it, Jason. You had it. And Doug talked you out of it. It was St. Louis.
Nice going.
So the L.A., you had the Rams did play the Patriots just 3 years ago. That terrible 13-3 game. And obviously Lakers, Celtics, and baseball Dodgers. But the Kings and Bruins never played in the Stanley Cup. This is kind of amazing. St. Louis and Boston 11 times. Obviously Super Bowl 36 was Tom Brady's first. Adam Vinatieri with the kick to win it over the St. Louis Rams. Yep. The NBA Finals in 1957, 58, 60, and 61. All Celtics, Ooh. Hawks. Celtics won three of those.
How'd you forget those, Glanville?
Oh, I didn't know any of those.
That's... Yeah. World Series 46, 67, 04, and 13. They split those 2-2. And Stanley Cup Finals, the Bruins and Blues actually played 3 years ago in 2019. And then the famous 1970, Bobby Orr scoring the goal and then flying through the air. That was also against the Blues.
Oh my God.
So Boston leads the overall series 7-4, but they've met 11 times across four sports.
11 times?
11 times, and we still got it wrong?
Yeah.
You know what, though? I don't feel that bad about missing.
I need a lifeline.
I don't feel that bad about missing this, even though we were so close. Any question that includes hockey, I feel like I personally have an excuse.
I should have texted.
And hockey is where you went astray, so it makes sense. The Kings.
It is, yeah. We might need a new trivia rule here. No more hockey questions. What do you think, Doug?
I want to bring back a lifeline, like Fred Lynn. You know, if I, you know, I could have texted a few people. NHL. My brother probably knew that one. He's a big NHL fan.
I honestly, we've talked about this. The lifeline thing, I think, would be really fun.
Yeah.
We have one phone a friend for every week's question, and we bring that friend in.
I think we always.
And the trivia question would then get longer than the rest of the show combined, but it would still be fun.
It would be fun. I was just thinking more about the Kings, and they were close. If you think about it, the Kings won the cup in, 12 and 13 or 12, 2012, 2014. And the Bruins have been good that whole time. The Bruins won it in 2011. Yeah. So, really close to Bruins Kings, but they never quite matched up. So, but then if that had happened, then there would have been two answers. So,
Wayne Gretzky. Yeah.
And he would ask some different question.
Ooh,
and at any rate, question. As you know, whether we get these questions right or wrong, the highlight of these trivia segments is not the part where we thrash around trying to answer these things. It's the part where we bring in the mayor of Starkville, Mayor Tim, to play another fantastic play-by-play clip involving this week's answer. Ooh. So, Tim, do you have a World Series highlight or a Super Bowl highlight this week? This question gave you a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, a lot of options. I didn't think about going back to the 1960s for the NBA. That was right off the hook. But I almost went with the Super Bowl and the Vinatieri kick to win it, Patriots first Super Bowl win.
Be fun.
But this is a baseball show. So at the end of the day, I decided to go with baseball. And when you think about these two teams, actually all those World Series were great, right? 46, 67, 04 wasn't great, and 13 we're actually going with the one that wasn't great. It was the sweep. But as far as history goes, and Boston and the Red Sox snapping the curse, we're going to go with that one. And Joe Castiglione on the radio.
Two out in the ninth inning here on the banks of the Mississippi River. The Red Sox need one more out. Swinging a ground ball, stabbed by Folk. He has it. He underhands to first, and the Boston Red Sox are the world champion. For the first time in 86 years, the Red Sox have won baseball's world championship. Can you believe it? The Red Sox now mobbing Keith Folk and one another between home and first. And as Ned Martin said back in 1967, pandemonium on the field.
That was so good by Joe Castiglione. And so, Doug, this was only one of the most memorable World Series of our lives, and we still got that question wrong. What is wrong with us?
Yeah, that's all right. You handed it off. LA just, I was too modern. I needed your 60s expertise. Sort of leaned into that. But we will try again.
That's, oh, well.
It's spring training. We're not even in spring training yet, so we're warming up. We're warming up. We'll, okay. We'll be undefeated.
We're 0 for 2023 right now, just so you know.
That's all right.
Listen, Mike, sorry you couldn't join us to hear us thrash around and get this one wrong, but great job with that question. Thank you so much for coming up with that. And if you're listening, you too could be part of these trivia segments just like Mike. We'll tell you how in just a few minutes. So if you remember the part of this show where we were kicking around the new schedule, I mentioned that later in the show, we would get to sit back and let Doug tell some schedule tales from back in his day. Well, now we're hanging out in the dugout, so you know what that means. That time has arrived. So, Doug, I cannot wait to hear about the madness that the schedule used to inflict on you back when you were hanging around playing in the major leagues.
Well, Jay, I mean, my instincts tell me to be a little bit careful with this because the minor leagues was so much harder. So I try to be grateful for these tough experiences, travel in Major League Baseball, because, I mean, we, you know, connected through St. Louis. We slept on bus racks. I mean, it was horrendous. So I think that is, I'm going to start off with that, like, asterisk. But once you got spoiled enough in the major leagues, you do kind of start to think, like, things should go smoothly. And I know we went through a lot of different things from, you know, 2 days when interleague started, there was only these two, there was a lot of 2-game series, and that was horrible.
Yeah.
Day game, night game, and that didn't go very well. Players complained a lot about that, and there's no doubt that things changed. And I know, look, when 9/11 happened, everything changed. We all of a sudden, we used to be able to drive the bus right onto the tarmac and just fly off, and once 9/11 happened, you know, we had security. So, you know, things have shifted for a lot of reasons. But, you know, one thing that stood out is 1 year in 04, which was my last season, and Larry Boa was managing. HBO, I believe, did their, like, Hard Knocks, or they were following us around all season. And it happened to be a season where we had this crazy 2+ week road trip. And I recall being kind of film coming out of the dugout. I think it was either after we got back or before we're about to take this trip. I think we got back. And I remember mentioning that we hit 5 continents on this last road trip. So that tells you the story of what happens. And so I think
so we long was this trip?
So, yeah. So I thought this trip was like 17 days. When I went back and, you know, looked and we did the research, it was like 14. But that's still 2 weeks. And that's a pretty sizable road trip for any team. So you're going to hit 4 cities about. And in this case, you know, maybe, I don't know if we have any days off this trip. I don't know. But all I know is we had 1 day off, and the cities were like coast in different time zones other than the LA, San Diego on the back end. So I think,
what look this up. So just to recap, it started in, well, you went from Philadelphia to Florida. So you started in Florida, wonderful, Eastern time zone. Then you went to Chicago, Central time zone. Then you did, L.A. and San Diego, maybe not in that order, but if you'd only changed planes in Denver, you could have set foot in all 4 time zones in 1 trip.
That was beautiful. So let me tell you what that does to you, the delirium that sets in. First of all, the time zones, and it's like when you ease your way across the country and then you jump over to the West Coast, it's a disaster. And then coming back east, of course, you know, jet lag and everything. So this was particularly tough, and it gets to the point where you don't, I mean, forget about remembering what hotel you're in. You can't even remember what floor or key. You're like, you know, I remember a couple of times going to the floor of the previous hotel because I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in 1221, but that was like two cities ago. So that's where you know you're in trouble. And but this particular trip ended up being really magical. And what was magical about it is at one point when I bought my house in Pennsylvania, when I signed with the Phillies, my first, like, and I think only long-term deal, I guess. When I signed that contract, I had an interior designer. I know that sounds crazy, right? Interior designer helped me with my house because I had, you know, I bought this house, first house I'm owning. It's white walls. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't match colors. And my mom was like, you're going to host Thanksgiving this year. So I had to hire a decorator. And it turned out the decorator had helped the woman that sold me the house in the first place. So she had an inside understanding of this house. And at some point, she says, hey, you know what? I think I could hook you up. in your dating game. I could step up your dating game. That's what she told me. Now I'm thinking, this is an older British woman, whatever. What do you, you don't know what you're talking about. So I ignored her for a while. She sets me up on a, not directly, but through a friend who she thought was going to introduce to her daughter. The daughter had a colleague working at a law firm with her in Delaware. So she's like, well, I'm not available, but I have a friend and associate at a law firm that I might set you up on. Okay. So we were like, fine. We emailed all that. And needless to say, that became my wife. So that road trip was right after I went on my first date with my wife. And a total, it was like double blind date. Like we didn't, I didn't know any connection to who was setting us up. She didn't know. And that double blind date, we just blindly went. She was studying for the Pennsylvania bar. And I was like trying to figure out how to catch her before I go on this road trip. And I was like, you got to eat. So we ended up meeting pretty early, like a brunch time somewhere downtown in Philadelphia. So that trip became life-changing, even though like I was out of my mind and exhausted and jet lagged, like we always are on 2-week bi-coastal type of stuff. It was worth every minute of it. Cause I remember sending my wife her first text message. She didn't even know how to answer it. She was like, what am I supposed to, my phone's ringing. I don't know what's going on. And that's what began. Cause I'm a master text poet, I'd say. Text poet, look that up. So that is the beauty of long road trips sometimes. You never, ever know what deal you're closing, and it might be the greatest deal you close in your life. So thank you, Philadelphia Phillies, for scheduling madness in 4 different continents, because I met my wife and I had my first date with my wife. The rest is history.
All right. Well, that story took a turn I wasn't expecting. you took a trip to 4 continents and then you lived happily ever after.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. I did.
Like, that was a plot twist, folks. When you go to the dugout, you never know where it's going to lead you. Doug just got married in the dugout. So it's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. Much like this show. And speaking of which, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all spring training long on the Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to read any of the sensational spring training coverage in The Athletic, I can tell you how to do that. You just amble over to theathletic.com/baseballshow. And if you're a new subscriber, guess what? You can subscribe for just $1.99 a month for the next 12 months. Also remember, you too can be part of this podcast. Pretty much every show, we keep picking some fun listener trivia question, and then that lucky listener gets to join us right here and prove, once again, there's almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong. So how could you possibly join us? We can tell you how. You can always email us at Starkville@theathletic.com. That's Starkville with an E on the end. Or you can come up with a question and tweet it at us on the Twitter, where Doug Glanville still resides. Doug, have you changed addresses on Twitter? Or are you right where we left you?
Yeah, I always wonder, like, do you say Twitter or the Twitter? Because it's sort of like MLB and the MLB. I think they're... It's always a big debate, but I like that. I like the Twitter. We use that a lot. So I think we should coin that as the vernacular of
the Twitter. Yep.
But we're going to say,
I sometimes call it the Google in my house.
I like it. The does give you a little power. So you can reach me at Doug Glanville, but it's actually at DougGlanville and tweet me there.
Okay. So the THE are silent and invisible.
Yes. So, and you could the tweet me there. Yes.
All right. I don't know what Doug just said, but I am at Jason St. That's GaySonst. Please remember to hashtag the questions, hashtag Starkville QS, no THE. So Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Adam Wainwright for visiting us. Thanks to Mike Frentz for the great trivia question. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Doug and I will see you soon on Starkville.
The NFL is unmatched. Elite athleticism, weekly drama, millions watching every game day, billions of dollars in revenue. But among all that attention, money, and success, the league has a critical flaw.
In my experience, the NFL does have a race problem, but more than that, the owners have a race problem.
The people who make the hiring decisions, I don't think that they are going to look at two candidates and think the black candidate is clearly superior.
What you don't realize is that as you're going through all of that, the stress it puts on, it's like somebody beating you down every day.
The thing is, it has to be player led. We call it the NFL, but the 32 owners, like, we can't sit here and say, like, this is important to all 32 of those guys.
Football teams hated it. You know, issues like the national anthem, kneeling for the national anthem, issues like players speaking out at protests.
Watching Roger Goodell, like, get on TV and, you know, try to sound like he with it. We know it. There's a definite limit on this allyship, right?
I wasn't a big fan of the NFL because of what I had to go through and the way it was. I looked up on it, and I just felt like I was fed up with the NFL.
I'm Tashawn Reed, the host of a new podcast series from The Athletic called Between the Lines. The series details how America's biggest game has grappled with America's biggest issue. From the players who weigh the risks of being socially active in the wake of Colin Kaepernick, to coaches and executives vying for equal opportunities, to a league and owners who have failed to support and promote diversity. The series includes exclusive interviews from LaDainian Tomlinson, Doug Williams, Jason Wright, and several more players, coaches, and front office executives across the game. Look for Between the Lines starting on February 14th on the Athletic Football Show every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts.